everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of Indie Film Cafe. This is the month of April of 2021, and I'm your host, Jonathan Moody. I'm also here with my co-host, Paul A. Presenza.
Known as the Moo Cow, and I'm also here with Continuity Monkey.
Yes, and I'm here with TNA Monkey, which, you know, we only need the T, I guess, for him. He's half. Monkey today, and we also have a special guest today. We've got Liz Fletcher. How are you doing, Liz?
I'm good. How are you, Jonathan?
I'm doing fantastic.
Hey, welcome to the show.
Yes, welcome.
Thanks, Paul. It's good to be here.
We are very excited. Liz is not a stranger to the podcast stuff, though, right? Or at least the vidcast. You did a couple.
This is my second one.
Is it the second?
Okay.
I thought you did. Okay, I know you did one for 31 days. No, you didn't do 31 days yet. You did the other one, Quick Review Thursday with me. So,
oh, okay.
All right. So awesome. This is your second one. Oh, I'm excited. This will be the first one out and available. And this will be the, and this is all podcasts, so just all audio. And we're really excited to have you on here. To talk about a little movie from The Asylum, made, I believe, in 2005, I want to say. 2005.
I think it's 2003.
Well, maybe it was made then, but it came out in 2005. And it's called Jolly Roger Massacre at Cutter's Cove. And I absolutely love this movie. We'll get into more of that in a little bit. But before then, let's listen to some
mood music.
All right, we are back. We are here to discuss Jolly Roger Massacre at Cutter's Cove. So first, Liz, you've never heard of this movie before I asked you to watch it, right?
I never hear of any of the movies you recommend.
I get that a lot, trust me.
Oh God, he's worse than I am, trust me. I don't know. We'll see what you have to say about this, because this may go down as one of the toughest ones. So Liz, what did you think? What was your overall thought when you watched this movie?
Overall, I really enjoyed it. I think the acting was decent by most of the actors. A couple of them were
I know which ones you were referring to.
And I mean, not that I'm no Meryl Streep, but some of them were kind of iffy. But the storyline was pretty good. The actors did good. I loved the gore in it. It was super. The makeup, the prosthetics they did, I liked it. It was kind of cheesy, but it was good. I enjoyed it.
Oh, awesome. All right. What about you, Paul? This is your first time watching it too.
It is. I pretty much hated it. I pretty much thought the opposite. I didn't think the acting was necessarily too bad. You're right. There's definitely a cheese factor here, but the story was just so poorly constructed, and they clearly had no idea about any kind of police procedural stuff whatsoever. Lots of gaping plot holes, lots of dumb stuff, and we'll get into all of that because there's just so much of it. But as a director, Gary Jones was okay. I didn't think there was a problem as a director, but as a writer, this was just terrible. Absolutely terrible.
The writing was left to be desired, but I think that was the weakest part of the movie. Like Liz mentioned, the gore was really cool, like really good gore. And what we're going to get into some of the actors too in a little bit, because I really adored some of the actors in this movie, and I have always adored them. So there's some actors that I actually know a few of them, you know, personally. And I know the writers. So, boy, they're going to, they're either going to be happier or not.
They're going to love me.
I mean, you got to be nice.
I mean, I am nice. I'm generally nice.
Well, and here, I guess this is a good chance to bring this up. even if we talk about movies that we say we don't like it, or we think it's terrible, or we make jokes on it or whatever, that doesn't mean we tell people not to watch it. We almost always will make it a point to say, okay, we think this, but go out and check it out. Here's how you can get your hands on it and make your own determination for yourself. We just feel that these are all movies, whatever it is we take, that people should watch. So even if we don't necessarily like it, that doesn't mean that other people aren't going to like it. So we'll still support people making independent cinema. That's like our big number one goal.
Exactly. And I think we should definitely say that on every episode to make sure that people understand, because we don't, I don't want people thinking that we're here to, like, you know, trash their movie. That's not our goal. Our goal is to get the awareness out about these movies. We like to show these, you know, I enjoyed showing this to you guys, you know, there might be problems or whatever throughout it, which happens in every production and every movie. There's always going to be something you're not happy with as a director, as an actor, as a producer, as a writer. You know, something gets changed and something loses, whatever. We're probably going to talk about that. But before we get into all that, for sure, Paul, can you encapsulate the story? The story?
Yeah. So basically, a bunch of them nasty, wicked teenagers who are drinking and or about to have sex find a treasure chest just kind of sitting in the sand. And the one kid, instead of like having sex with his hot chick girlfriend, decides, oh, I wonder what this is. And he opens it up and he finds a skull in there. And naturally, the first thing he does is pick it up and play with it. And then he tosses it into the water. And that somehow magically creates a evil pirate ghosty spirit demon thing who comes back fully dressed with weapons and proceeds to kill four of the teenagers in gross ways. And I guess he now has he has to go around and start killing certain people. Let's put it that way. And although he kills pretty much everyone he can, but
and you know what's weird is they all apparently all of them, he knows which ones are like the descendants of the pirates. There's, you know, there's a whole big backstory with that of like, it's like the descendants of his group of pirates all basically made this one little, island, whatever, Cutter's Cove. They all came together and they cut off his head, and now he's getting revenge by cutting off their heads, the heads of like the descendants or whatever.
But he's killing other people too. It's not really consistent.
No, because if you notice, like, there's one point where he looked like he was going to kill the one girl that was like the secretary, but he didn't kill her. He just scared her.
You know, like the one chick, the African American chick who gets the skewer.
I think she was a descendant.
I don't think so, because her eyes never lit up. And then the other one, the bodyguard in the club, he tears his arm off and kills that guy.
Okay. So there was a few people maybe extra. But maybe, you know, he's
killing the ones that are getting in the way of his vendetta.
That good point. Good point, Liz. I like that. That worked. I didn't even think of it like that. Because I was just enjoying him killing everybody. Like, he didn't even have to have an agenda, you know, like it could be just random. I was so excited, and I'm going to say this real quick. I was so excited about the mayor getting killed, you know, like she was annoying me to like death and, you know, and everything. She was supposed to be the mayor you hate.
And you see, what you just said is exactly what the you know, producers and the people who made this film want. They want you to be all happy about this ridiculous pirate creature killing people and not worry about the fact that you know, the details don't really add up and there's lots of gaping holes. Just fill it with boobs and people getting their heads cut off. Kids will love it.
I believe that is the asylum's motto.
Pretty much.
You know, pretty much just put that
boobs and decapitations.
So I said this earlier, but like, this was one of the first films that I'd seen from The Asylum. I'd watched Beast of Bray Road, and then I rented this one with Frankenstein Reborn, like right after I saw those, because after I saw Beast of Bray Road, because I was like, what is this company? And I realized they made like a lot. I went on their IMDb and saw that they made a lot of movies, you know? So I was like, they're making like at least one movie a month.
And a lot of the same actors are in a bunch of their movies, you know, like so, Thomas Downey's in Beast of Bray Road.
Tom Nagel.
Rhett Giles is in the other pirate movie we talked about.
Exactly. Rhett Giles is amazing as the pirate Jolly Roger. I really loved him. But we'll get into that when we get into characters. So this was my favorite, like at the time. I probably, just like you said, Paul, I was not thinking about all the, you know, problems with the movie when I first watched it. I was just excited to see a pirate killing people, you know. I mean, right? That's the point of the movie. Come on.
Exactly.
If you start really thinking about it, you know, you're gonna like, you know, hurt your brain. And, you know, that's obviously what this doesn't want. It doesn't want you to hurt your brain. It wants you to turn your brain off and
just... No problems there. I mean, we talked about this in the beginning before the show. I said this to me, this was somebody, it's like somebody took Leprechaun, where you have this wisecracking, ridiculous little mythological creature who's running around looking for his gold, and you smushed it with The Fog, which is about a pirate ghost coming back from the grave to revenge themselves on the townspeople, except you took the worst aspects of the two and kind of put them in there together. And you brought in Pirates of the Caribbean. I guess so. I've never saw them, so you know, I couldn't talk about that, but I presume that's in there as well.
I got a
Pirates of the Caribbean vibe.
Well, this was at the time in 2005. Disney was making the new Pirates of the Caribbean, the first one, I believe. So about the same time that they were putting that out, the Asylum decided they had to do a mockbuster, because that's what they do. They put out these movies that are similar to the film or whatever. They were smarter on the next one that they did with Lance Henriksen. They did Pirates of Treasure Island, which worked with Pirates of the Caribbean, so that they'd be like right next to each other in the video store. That's what they generally did, was they find movies that had like, they made a title similar to the thing. Instead of Transformers, they had Transmorphers. And so the people would go to the video store, back when the video stores existed, and they would go to the video store and they would look up Transformers, but they'd accidentally pick out Transmorphers, and they'd go home and they would watch.
Boy, would they be disappointed.
Right, exactly. Like a grandmother would bring this home to their grandson thinking it's a completely different movie. And that was their goal.
Instead of a $100 million major picture, we're going to get a $50,000 shitty picture.
Okay. $100,000.
Oh, but man, I don't know.
I thought on IMDb it said $500,000.
Oh, all right. Don't believe everything you read on IMDb. Trust me. Most of the time they inflate that to like way more so that the distribution things, you know, will pan out more. People will be like, oh man, it's a $500,000 movie. It must be good.
But yeah. It goes back to the old days. I mean, you know, Roger Corman was doing cheap, shitty versions of major Hollywood studio films as well in order to sort of please the drive-in crowd. It's the oldest chestnut in the indie world, because that's an easy way of breaking into the scene, is by doing your own cheaper and hopefully different variation of a movie that's already exists, you know?
Exactly. Okay, so to give a little background on this movie too, so we mentioned Gary Jones was the director, you know, and Gary did a bunch of really great horror films that I love. I don't know, Paul, if you've seen Mosquito.
Yeah,
and he did, and he used to work for Xena Warrior Princess, and Hercules and Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, the television show. And then he did Spiders and he did Crocodile 2, Death Swamp, which I love. Absolutely love that movie. And that is a good movie. And then 3 years later, he does Jolly Roger. And after then, he did a bunch of other films. Like he did Boogeyman 3 and Ballistica. And oh, one of my favorites that's going to be on, that is definitely going to be on Indie Film Cafe at some point, is Axe Giant, The Wrath of Paul Bunyan. Oh my goodness. Dear.
Wow.
That movie is so ridiculous. Like a big giant guy just killing everybody with an axe, giant axe. Just a lot of fun. Very, you know, kind of, I feel like kind of what Jolly Roger tried to do, because as we said before, Jolly Roger was this like, why is supposed to be a wisecracking pirate, but if you ever notice, does he really crack wise? Does he have any one-liners?
Not really.
He's not very really. Funny. And that was kind of a bummer for me rewatching it, because I always sort of thought of him as the funny, pirate. And I just did not remember any.
Right. And that's the biggest difference between him and say Leprechaun or some of the other traditional movie monster things where they get to spout out a ridiculous one-liner in order to sort
Freddy Krueger.
You know, you get a nod and a wink. He doesn't really do that. He's just kind of moaning about his stupid treasure.
Yeah. Know? And there might have been like one little funny bit, I think, in the strip club that was sort of funny with him. But aside from that, it was just wasn't.
He said that is a musket.
Yeah. That was it. Yeah.
That was my favorite line too. It was funny. Because the way he said it was like he seemed a little bit confused. That is a musket.
Right. Which was perfect for his character and it was perfect for the movie. Although, but aside from that. Really
be a musket, because a musket is actually,
right,
a long gun.
Well, come on, Paul, stop ruining the movie. Jeez.
Oh, please.
They could have said a pistol.
Exactly.
I guess the whole point of saying was that a musket was that would have been even funnier if she had said that is that a musket in your pocket? Are you just happy to see me? He goes, no, it's a pistol.
That would have worked.
That would have worked too. That would have been just as funny.
Although I do like the fact that he uses the pistol several times, and yeah, it's gonna hurt somebody, but it doesn't really kill them like outright, like a modern gun would. They were like more annoyed. It's kind of funny.
Gary Jones and Jeff Miller wrote this film, so I know you have a lot of problems with the writing. Ugh. And everything, and I guess we'll get into that later specifically. It was produced by the Asylum, as I mentioned. Asylum, at this point in the Asylum's career, they had done maybe a few movies, and the one that really stands out as the movie that like made the company and got them was H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds, with C. Thomas Howell, and it was really like that movie was really well done too. Like compared, I mean, there's obviously some ish, small little issues, but compared to like this and some of the other early Asylum films, and even some of their later Asylum movies where they're just making it just to get the next movie made, it seems like. They really, I feel like this movie was sort of one of the first ones to really just kind of, they had enough money, let's go make this movie. And then they didn't really take the time to like develop it,
Right. Definitely. I agree with that.
And so I think that might've been the biggest problem was that they didn't have a lot of time on the writing. Liz, did you like the writing or did you feel like there should have been some stuff, put back in there to explain things?
I felt like it was probably put together pretty quickly writing wise.
Yeah.
Well, for example, like the cop, at one point they call him chief, and then another point someone calls him lieutenant, and then somebody else calls him sheriff.
I heard sheriff too. I don't remember lieutenant, but I remember sheriff.
So I'm like, okay, what is this guy's title? And then it seemed like the cops were running the morgue at the same time because they were doing all the morgue. I'm like, no town is allowed to do that. You can't have that.
No, definitely. And I knew, like, when I was watching it, I knew, because we are doing stuff with our own film production company. We're doing stuff with police work. And, you know, there's things I don't know. I have to do more research on police, especially the ones in Virginia. But, you know, like, I knew that the police don't do that. And it just seemed like somebody who might have, they might have just taken things they seen in TV and just kind of tried to use it.
And not even good stuff. Like, you know, they say that their standard thing is to take DNA samples of everybody. No, but they don't Mirandize everyone, which is the law. Okay. That's crazy. You can only take DNA samples unless you give consent. And that's after you've been arrested, because that's on an unreasonable search. You can't do that. In fact, you generally have to have a warrant for that. That changed somewhat in 2013, but even so, you're not going to be taking DNA samples off of everybody, and not for any good reason too. It's just, you just don't do that. They're not equipped for that, especially a small town police department. Where are they going to store all this stuff? I mean, and what are they going to have it for? It's just, you know, it was silly. It was very silly.
And another question I had, and maybe you know this answer, Paul, because I don't. He goes to give his resignation to the mayor. Is that a typical thing of, like, hand in your resignation to the mayor, or who would he normally report to?
Either that or to a city council. It kind of depends on how it's set up. Usually it's a city council. But, you know, a lot of places the mayor is the one who appoints the sheriff, some places, or whatever it is, whatever his title is. Some places they are elected, like in Virginia, we elect sheriffs. It all kind of depends on the township and who's, you know.
I think he was the chief of police. Like, that's what they kept calling him in the beginning. Like you said, it did change a couple times. And his like title changed, but like, I think he was the chief.
No, but I do love the fact that the mayor seems to be calling the shots. Clearly, he wants the FBI brought in on this. And she's like, oh, well, don't bring in the FBI. Excuse me, mayor. You don't run the freaking police. You're the mayor. Just handle the money. Let the police chief do the job. And if he's telling you he can't solve the murder himself and needs assistance, that's what you have a chief of police there for.
Well, she seemed to know that that everything that's going on, right?
Oh yeah, I understand why she's doing it, but she can't.
Well, I'm also thinking like how did she know that this guy was like, you know, killing the, like, she knew everything before the police did. Like,
of course she
and
did.
Why wasn't she? I mean, I understand there's a deep dark secret, you know, and everything. But like, why, like, it just made no sense. Absolutely.
Sure. Why is she even there in that town waiting for this ghost to come back? Why isn't she like in California somewhere? Although I guess it doesn't matter, because our ghosty pirate can just poof whenever he wants to, which is what he does. He just kind of appears whenever he feels like it, has whatever weapons he wants. They all function perfectly well because I guess it's magic.
That's actually, I watched a review of this, and that was their take on it too. Was on Bloodbath and Beyond, the podcast group that they do stuff online on YouTube. Mm-hmm.
That's a good group. I like them.
I like them too. I've actually met them. They're really nice. But they were talking about this movie, and they said they they believed like it was magic. Because he would be able to just kind of have a weapon at any time and whatever he wanted. So he was like, they were like, why don't he just create whatever weapon he wanted at any, you know what I mean? Like, why didn't he go further than that if they were able to do that with
them? It's the, you know, the same thing that you see in cartoons with, you know, Bugs Bunny can sort of do whatever he needs to do, or Droopy the dog. Droopy the dog is always the biggest one for me, because if you ever watch any of those old cartoons, Droopy the dog is like God. He pretty much rearranges reality whenever it seems fit to him. And he has this amazing power that can just do that whenever he wants to. So everyone should just kind of give up, because you can't fight that.
You can't fight God. That's right. True.
You can't fight someone like that. So it's kind of the same thing with these people. They're like, hey, you may as well just sit down and wait to get your head chopped off because ain't nothing you can do about it.
All right. So we're going to talk real quick about the acting. And so we'll go right in. I'm going to go through IMDb and I'm going to list the people, and then we're going to talk about each one that the main characters. Rhett Giles plays Jolly Roger, Roger LaForge. And I really did like him a lot. The makeup on him was amazing. Mm-hmm. He looked really freaking good. Probably the best makeup job I've ever seen on The Asylum, to be honest. So I thought they did a great job with him. Like I said, I wish he had more puns, you know, or something.
Right.
You know, something like that, you know, like where he could have had more fun with it. What do you guys think? Like, Liz, what did you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think they could have brought a little bit more humor to his character.
You think his character was sort of dull?
Yeah. I mean, I don't like to use that word, but.
Well, I mean, like, it's being honest. Like, we're not trashing the character, right, or whatever. We like the character. It's just, it's sort of like, it would be more humor or something, some more levity, which there was some humor. We'll get into that in a little bit, but you know, I don't know. What do you think, Paul?
Well, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of, you can't really compare a ghost or whatever he is. I guess he's supposed to be a revenant, you know, a sort of a ghost looking for revenge. Can't really compare that with like a regular person. You have to worry about having a three-dimensional personality for. So, I mean, he just wants to kill people and get his gold back. That's all he cares about. So that's all he talks about. So that's all he does. He's kind of one-dimensional, but I guess that's sort of what his purpose is to be sort of one-dimensional, because what else are you going to have him do? I mean, it was veering off into an interesting area when he went to the strip club, and it looked like, okay, he's kind of interested in this one dancer. She has nothing to do with his thing, but he's kind of talking with her and interacting with her. That could be interesting. And then he just kind of dumps her and that's it. But that
then he goes after the other one and kills her. And she was, I guess, a descendant, you know, or right, whatever.
But that would have been interesting, because that's an opportunity to show us something more than just, you know, kill, 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 get my gold back, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, I get that. So then there's Tom Nagel, who I've met at Texas Frightmare, and I've had on my radio show before. And I really, like, I absolutely thought he was great in this movie.
Director of Clown Town.
Director of Clown Town, yes. We have not done that one yet, which we should, because have you seen it yet, Paul?
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen it, Liz? Oh my God.
You know, I love me some clown movies.
Oh man. It's fun. It's a fun movie, for clowns. So yeah. But he also, I think he also produced, maybe directed The Toy Box, which I also own. It's a great movie as well. And then, Christina Korn played Jessie. I don't really know her. I don't think she's worked at the Asylum since then. Maybe she saw this movie.
Tom Nagel did direct The Toy Box.
Yeah. Toy Box is great, by the way.
He co-produced Ouija House.
Yeah. So we haven't done that yet, but that's also produced by Jeff Miller, by the way. So there you go. There's a connection there. Then there, of course, there's Thomas Downey, Tom Downey, who played. So on IMDb, they don't even list him as sheriff, chief, or lieutenant. Right. He's just listed as Mathis.
I know, yeah. Because they couldn't figure it out.
On IMDb, they couldn't figure which one it was out, I guess. And so he's been in a lot, like we said before, he's been in a lot of the Asylum films back in the day, usually by Lee Scott. So he was in Beast of Bray Road, Frankenstein Reborn.
Plays a lot of cops and FBI people, I see.
Yeah, he played Andrew Jackson in Pirates of the Treasure Island. He was one of my favorite characters in Dracula's Curse. I mean, he's just somebody I really enjoy on the Asylum. So, and he's doing a bunch of stuff right now too. I believe he's producing a lot. of stuff. He's producing a couple movies right now, one called Diary of an Exorcist and Bachelorette Party Massacre. So
he's, ooh, what that's about.
I don't know. I guess you'd have to find out. Then there's Kim Little, who's actually the she is the wife of David Michael Latt, who is the executive producer and of the Asylum, and the head, one of the head Asylum guys. And she's been acting, like, I think she acted before working with him, and then she's worked with him. And she was as Lowenstein, she was the detective, I guess, who's been helping. Right. I loved her. I absolutely adored her in the movie.
She was in Scarecrow Slayer and 666 The Child and Super Croc. So she's been in a bunch of movies that I have.
Yeah, and all of them are from the Asylum.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, she's wonderful. And I thought she was great. What did you guys think? Did you think she did a great job.
Yeah, she's a good actress. I hate to see her wasted in a kind of a role like this. Her character really irritated me. For example, she actually sees the stupid pirate killing somebody. She puts a gun on him, and what does she do? She yells freeze and then doesn't shoot him. I'm like, cops dream of the time where they actually see a homicide taking place right in front of them so they can open up and shoot every bullet they've got right at him. That's like the cleanest kill you could possibly get. And does she shoot her gun? No. Like, are you kidding me? Why?
This goes back to Dark Wolf.
I know. It's just, except it's worse because she's a cop. That's her job. What are you doing? You just let him walk away. But the cops in general are terrible. You notice, I mean, first of all, they go into that interrogation room and the kid picks the lock with a bra. Can that really be done? They wander out of the police department like nobody cares, la la la. Then he steals his own car from the lot, which is not locked or anything. He just drives it off. They're the worst cops ever.
But yeah, let's get back to the bra thing, because I did not, when I saw that, I was just like, I like, and who knows, like, what guy can ask, like, the over under clasp or whatever, like, you know what I mean? Like, who knows that kind of question to ask a woman? Weird. Like, that was because, I mean, I'm guessing, the only thing I can guess was that when they wrote it, they were thinking he's done this before, right? So he had to know which kind of, thing.
And please forgive me, I don't know a whole lot about bras. I do know some have metal and some plastic. I assume there's some metal in that bra and that's what he used. I can't still understand how or why.
I don't think the hooks are long enough to pick a lock.
That's what I would have thought, but I don't have any experience in that, so
that's why I don't know.
I don't know. I guess if you ever get kidnapped, you gotta take off your bra and find out.
And then the kid is like, oh my god, they're gonna frame me, they're gonna send me to the electric chair. He's like having this big time freak out when it's like, dude, just call your parents and get a lawyer.
Right.
No way.
Like, they weren't even under arrest.
No, they weren't.
The people even, literally, the cops literally tell them that too. You're not under arrest.
Which is why they're not supposed to, not going to be taking DNA samples from somebody they haven't even, they're supposed to get a conviction, much less an arrest. They're just random people. Oh my god, it's just so poorly written, poorly researched, because they didn't care about that part. Gary Jones, he spent a lot of time doing visual effects. That's kind of where he made his bones, so he's used to doing, and that's why I think a lot of the the head stuff and a lot of the gore effects were pretty good. Not all of them, but a lot of them were pretty good. So that's kind of what they were focusing on, was the visuals and the idea of the pirate running around killing things. They just didn't really care about the details or how stuff adding up,
Right.
But for me, I'm the kind of person, things have to make some kind of sense for me.
I'm right there with you, buddy. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Some of the times I was just like going, okay, I don't remember because I hadn't really seen it since it first came out. I first saw it, I'd wanted to watch it and just never did. But like, and this was the greatest excuse, you know, it was like, oh, I get to rewatch this again. I got excited and then rewatching it, I was like, this isn't what I remember it being like, you know, like, but I do want to talk real quick, actors wise, I want to talk about Justin Brannick's acting. He was the one who played Tom, who was the kid who was making little wieners, and apparently he was more than one wiener. And the girl kept saying, "It's, you know, they're done, blah blah blah." It was one. He was making one. How is like one gonna feed all four of those people? But yeah, continuity. And it was just like, and then on top of that, his acting was one of the worst in the thing. His delivery was just so strange. Like,
And I liked that. In fact, I was really kind of hoping it was going to be him and then the other chick whose name I never got, the African-American chick. I was kind of hoping they would be the ones who survived and not Alex and Jess. That kind of find them boring, frankly, but
right. Yeah. Well, you don't like the kind of characters who are just kind of bickering the whole time and yelling at each other about whatever issues. Yeah. And that's sort of, I mean, look, when you have these kind of movies, slasher films, a lot of times you have the characters who have to have some kind of inner turmoil or something going on.
Conflict.
You know, conflict. Yeah, because otherwise it's going to be boring if they're like all happy-go-lucky. I know,
but it should at least make a little bit of sense. I mean, I remember her argument was, okay, you don't want to go to college, therefore you're cheating on me. What? No, I just don't want to go to college.
Yeah, you're going to be partying. And I'm like, didn't he just talk about like how he was going to be on a boat? Like most of the time, like, it's not like he's going to be partying on the boat. He's going to be working.
Right. I mean, if she was to say you're wasting your life and being stupid, I could understand that. But no, she goes right through. You do you want to date somebody else? Just tell me. I'm like, where did that come from?
Yeah, it's true. But yeah, so Jason Brannick, I loved his. I did love his delivery for it seems like trouble. TROUBLELEH trouble. It was the weirdest. Like the way it was just, oh, it was so weird. I loved it.
I'll tell you what, though, the way he did it, and I don't know whether it was the writing or how much of it was the actor himself, he showed me more about his character than some of the other ones did, just from right. that little bit alone. And that's the kind of stuff that I like. I like to see that. I like to see people who are different or characters who are different. And that's kind of why I wish he had kind of survived.
Yeah. So, Liz, you had mentioned earlier that you weren't, like, there were some actors, I guess, some of the acting wasn't as great or whatever. Was there specific things you remember? Like, anything?
Basically, everybody who died in the beginning.
Okay. So, the first four people or more?
Yeah.
Okay. Because, a lot of that scene was silly. And I think very over the top and very goofy. Right. And, almost felt a little out of place for the rest of the movie because there was, I don't know how much of this is directing and I don't know how much of it is writing and I don't know how much of this is acting, but the scene that really irked me in the movie the most is the scene where the guy, and this just happens in every freaking slasher movie because, and we talked about this on, and it happened in Dark Wolf too, but like there's a scene where a guy was on the phone with somebody, he didn't realize that Jolly Roger was looking at his fish or whatever. And he turns around, he sees the guy, and then he eats the fish. He's like, oh, don't do that, you know, or whatever. But then he sees the guy has a sword in his hand. At that particular moment, you run the other way. A lot of characters just stood there.
Exactly.
African-American girl did the same thing. She walked up to him while he had like the stuff in his like what right. are you like why do
it's
you do
stupid,
this
stupid but at least it's consistently stupid because you know the one guy got killed in this titty bar with his own arm, so you would have think everybody would leave. No, people stood there and stayed there. The one girl kept dancing like nothing. Like, I see this every day.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Oh, and there was another, did you guys notice in the background, there's some dude in the background, like just drinking a beer or whatever. And I'm just like, What in the world?
That's just another day for him.
Just another day.
I don't know. I haven't really been to that many strip clubs, but I've never seen that in my life.
Yeah, I have. The moment any kind of violence happens, everybody goes flying everywhere.
That's right. Not like that, you know. Like, nobody stands there and goes, "Up." I guess that's what's going to happen here.
And then we should talk about, since we're in the strip club, about the camera.
Oh, the camera angles. Yes. Okay. So there's a big scene in the movie where Ray, played by Lee Scott, who is one of the directors of the asylum, it goes, and he's playing the head of the strip club, I guess. He's the owner of the strip club, which is a little weird because at one point, the cop leaves to go and everything, and he just stands there with Bernadette Perez's character, and or Bernie Roberts, as she's also referred to. I think in this one she's Bernadette Perez, but now she's Bernie Roberts, and I'm actually friends with her. She's the girl who, the main stripper who didn't get killed, but coulda, and probably at one point was going to get killed or whatever. But she, so they're there, and then later he asks to see the security camera because he knows there's a security camera all the way up on the ceiling,
on the roof,
on the roof, yeah, of the ceiling or whatever. And then so he says, "Can I see the security footage?" It's one camera, it's one TV, right? And it's one camera getting every angle possible.
Multiple shots, and not even from up above. It's all from right down there, like it's the camera guy.
Yeah, no, it's literally. It boggled my mind how they could like see that and not say anything, you know, like not go, or did they think people just wouldn't care. Wouldn't care, just be like, because I guess like a lot of people probably didn't care. You know what I mean? Like, if you're watching this movie, you're probably not watching it for, you know.
Yeah, it all kind of depends on the dynamics. I mean, you know, when we do stuff, if there's something going on that I think is not right or is doesn't mm-hmm. going to work, usually I'll come out and I'll say, "Hey, this needs, you know, we should fix this or we should do that."
Right.
And generally, you're pretty good about that because you don't want to look like ridiculous or have an obvious mistake. So either someone pointed that out and they just shot him down, didn't care, or there was nobody there who cared to bother to look.
Exactly.
Just sloppy.
Yep, I agree. And Liz, have you ever had that kind of thing where like you're on set and you notice something and you, as an actor, do you feel like you should tell them? Like, is this
absolutely. And that's what I think it's important anytime you're on a film set to be comfortable with the people that you're working with and to be working as part of a team. That way you feel comfortable speaking up if you feel like there's some kind of thing that could be a continuity issue.
100% right. And not only that, but usually in your larger studios, they can afford to have continuity people whose specific job it is to watch out for that sort of thing. In a small independent group, you're not going to have the money for that. So you're kind of dependent on everybody else's eyes and ears, especially your actors who are there, you know, dealing with the scene itself and people who dress the sets and your assistant directors and all that. You're relying on all these people to pipe in. If there's a problem, say something. So either nobody said anything because they just didn't care, or worse, I think is that people did say something and they were just shut down, because that's bad, because you do have people who either it's their first time or they feel threatened or for whatever reason they don't want people in their crew or people to pipe up and say things, which is not a good way to make films, in my opinion.
No, not at all. I agree. I feel like a lot of times, even in a bigger production, you should let people say something, you know, and do everything like that. So
is that a dog?
Yeah, this is my little Pebble.
Oh, hello.
Paul is absolutely thrilled with dogs. So.
Yes, I love critters of all kinds.
I'll bring my chickens in here next time.
Yay, that'd be fun.
All right. So you're enjoying this enough where you're like, "Oh, let's do it next time."
We haven't scared her away.
Yeah, we haven't scared her away.
You signed me up for anything, Jonathan.
Oh, thank you. I love that. So, let's talk about the special effects, because the acting we pretty much nailed, and we talked about a lot of the acting before anyway throughout, you know, talking. So we've got pretty much everything done with that. Let's talk about the special effects, because I mean, I think that's where all the budget really went to, was the effects. And there was some really amazing gore effects. And then there was some that was not nearly as good, but you know, some kills were just, you know, a little tamer than others. And I guess you have to do that. You can't.
And
have
some of them were very, very quick shots too. Like they did it so fast that they wanted to make sure that you didn't really see the details, which is not a bad strategy if you don't have a lot of money to sink into that. I wish other movies had done that, because it happens so fast. You get the impression, your mind picks up what's going on, but it's not fast enough for you to see the actual details. That's probably a good choice in a lot of these films.
There's a lot of heads, you know, and that was the big thing too, was like the 16 heads in a dead man's chest.
Right.
You know, and then the characters say yo-ho-ho in a bottle of rum. So that was like, you know, like that was a whole, I guess that's a whole line from pirate stuff.
I kind of wish he'd meant his chest. It would have been fun if he'd like opened up his chest and put a head in there and just put all the heads in there.
If it were like Freddy, you know, that would be a thing. You know, like Freddy does stuff like that. This character was kind of, you nailed it when you said leprechaun. Because like that's what I see, but I see Leprechaun without the jokes, right? You know?
Exactly.
Maybe early Leprechaun, because like I think early Leprechaun he really wasn't that funny, and then he kind of, it's sort of like Freddy. Freddy wasn't very funny in the very beginning. He didn't have very many jokes. Maybe they were hoping that this movie would become like that, and there will be like Jolly Roger sequels, and then
At least in Leprechaun, and probably for the Freddy movies, they think they're going for actual real scares at first. And then as the movie becomes a hit and they're like, oh, we can make more money off this if we just keep churning them out there, they pretty much realize that it's not funny or it's not scary anymore. So we better go with the funny jokes, and we're in on how bad it is. And it's going to be funny, ha ha ha, not scary, because it's obviously not scary.
Well, that's the thing that gets annoying about what we're doing in the world today is people feel like we have to, like, if they did another Nightmare on Elm Street remake, they would have to make it scary again, right? And that's what failed, I think, ultimately for the Nightmare on Elm Street remake, was that we were already past that. You know, we don't need it to go back to being trying to be scary again. We need the comedy and other stuff that was in it, because that's what made it fun.
Because they already did the scary version, which is why you shouldn't be remaking it unless you're going in a completely new direction.
Exactly. So, yeah. And so I feel like this movie, Jolly Roger, maybe they were hoping to do like a franchise out of it, you know, which could have been cool if like it had, you know, had a good, you know, constructed plot, you know.
Yeah, no, they needed extra eyes in there, you know, just working on the story, making sure things make sense. You know, it's just like the kids, you know, they decide, you know, instead of doing the smart thing, which is fine, teenagers are stupid, they do stupid shit, but instead of going to a lawyer or somebody who can actually help them, they're like, let's go to the school computer lab and find out everything about the pirate, because this is a Scooby-Doo episode, apparently. So they go there, there's one computer and about 10,000 chairs, and then they look it up and, oh, here's the magic box, the internet, and that tells us everything we need. And she looks for a picture. Like, there's got to be a billion pictures of pirates on the internet, but they find the one that happens to click onto the exact information they need. Come on.
Okay, so I think, honestly, this movie would have been better had those other two characters, the African-American girl and I forgot her name, character name. I don't even know.
I don't think they ever mentioned it.
But then, and then Tom, you know, there, because it would have been like Scooby-Doo, you know, they could all get together and talk and kind of figure, try to figure things out. I think they killed them too quickly.
Right.
I think that that was what it was really missing, was that, that Scooby-Doo like real feel to it, because that's what they were. I didn't even realize if that's what they were going with.
I completely agree. And not only that, but the interaction between those two characters seemed to suggest that they knew each other, that there's some kind of backstory between them. Like exactly. When he's talking about his stories and she's like, oh, your stories suck. Clearly right. She's heard them before. So there's a relationship there. I wanted to know all about that. I really did.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know. Were they dating? Were they not dating? That was never like, it felt like they were like, he wanted to date her.
Oh, I'm sure he did. She was cute.
Yeah. And then she had no interest in him, it seemed.
Because well, it's one of those things. It's like, the more you're talking, the worse your chances are, dude. Just shut up.
Exactly. But I loved his character. It was so, some of his lines were so terrible. Like the line about, no, they're not. They're good. The way he delivered that.
just goofy little things. Like the one guy, Abernathy, the jerk who gets his fish eaten and then gets his head chopped off. He's got a secretary. Her name is Agnes. And all she does is sit at her desk. And I guess she's playing a video game with loud rock and roll music on. And he just doesn't seem to care. I'm like, try to do that at just about any other workplace for real and see how far you get with that. Come on.
Yeah. Right. And on top of that, yeah, she's just like listening to the music and just not giving a crap about him, because he's like yelling for her because he's about to be killed. And right. So she turns up the music.
And no, not to be a spoiler, but yeah, it kind of implies that she's killed, but she's not. And I was kind of glad for that, because she didn't do anything.
No, it looked like she was about to be, like he like skimmed her or something, you know, or whatever, which I was happy about because I forgot. And she was actually one of my favorite like little characters. That's Amanda Barton, who actually does all the costumes. So she's one, I'm guessing she's the one who put together the Jolly Roger costume, and she's worked with the Asylum for years. And now she works with, like, I think she works with Justin Jones and Rhett Giles and Jeff Miller on different stuff. So,
right. I mean, see, as a writer, you have to make a choice when you make a character like Jolly Roger. You have to say he's coming back for the purposes of getting revenge by killing the people, even though he can't kill the people who actually harmed him. He's going to do the next best thing by going after their descendants, even though it's not their fault. Still, at least there's a reason. However, when he starts killing people who have nothing to do with that, who are innocent, that kind of turns you against that character, because they didn't do anything wrong. So,
well, I mean, you know, you're supposed to be against him anyways. The character
who dies, that it's irritating, but they could have made it worse if they had killed Agnes's character, but they let her go, which was good. That was a good move.
I'm just saying, like, he's the villain. You're not really supposed to be rooting for him. Like,
but you were. That was what you said. Remember, you said, I would like seeing the pirate killing people. And well, it makes it so much better when they deserve it.
Yeah, okay. But I'm just saying, you're still supposed to care for the characters, you know? Like, you're still supposed to care for some of the characters, and then the other characters can die. Like, Abernathy, I was happy he died. Like, he was a jerk. He was a jerk. He deserved to die. The other girl didn't deserve to die. The bouncer was, as Liz pointed out before, the bouncer was in his way. You know, he was there.
That's his job. You know, it's his job to get in the way.
Well, I'm sorry, but he was in the way of a killer freaking revenge.
He's like a supernatural being who's super strong. He could just push him out of the way if he really wanted to.
I don't know. Was he super strong? That's true. Was he super strong? I don't know.
Oh, yeah. That guy punched him straight up, and then he tried to punch him again. He just caught it like it was nothing. Then he tore the guy's arm off.
That's
people
true.
Can't tear people's arms off.
Tore the guy's arm off and then beat him with it, which was pretty awesome.
So
that was my favorite part, though. And see, even though he's the villain and he's, you know, he's killing these people, I absolutely did enjoy some of the kills he was doing, even for some of the bad people, you know, or whatever. You know, people like the bouncer. I just didn't like him. you know, like he was in the way. I wanted him to.
Boo. How could you not like the bouncer? He was protecting the girl, doing his job.
Amen.
Thumbs up to the bouncer, man.
All right. Anyway, I agree. I agree with your opinion on it. So maybe there should have been a little bit more consistency with like to say, consistency with his the murders. Oh, he's got a pun for every cow like saying.
Oh yeah, listen to the podcast. It's nothing but bad cow puns all over the place.
Yeah. I guess this pretty much, was there anything else we wanted to touch about? Is there something that you guys at all thinking about it? Did you guys need to mention?
The one other weird part is when they go to the cemetery, and I guess that's when they find out that it's the town forefathers, and she decides to make a rubbing. Why? What? The names.
Oh yeah.
The names are right there. Oh. You could just write them down.
Yeah.
You do a rubbing if you can't read it. You know, you do a rubbing if you can't read the letters because you can't read them. So you rub it there to see what the letters are. The letters are clear. You just write down what the names are. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Blood Bath and Beyond talked about that as they give like their ratings are like 1.5 or 1 whatever, like they'll pick something funny out of the movie or whatever. And one of them was like etching a page instead of, and when you can clearly write it, like what, you know, right? When you can clearly write it.
Ridiculous. And
yeah, it is ridiculous. I agreed. It was weird. Like I didn't get that at all, but I was like, oh, okay. Cause like I don't even think she could read. I don't think it worked, you know, when she did it. Like, I don't know. So it was funny. It was just a strange thing. Maybe they thought in the writing, maybe it worked because there was something specific.
Or maybe they thought it was going to be an old tombstone where you can't read the writing. That would have made sense. But
true,
it was obvious.
They very well could read it. I mean, we could read it like completely.
Which is why it would have been a great line if Tommy'd be like, what are you doing that for? You can read it.
Yeah. See, it's little things like that you can add to the movie to make it like understandable, you know, but also put some humor into it.
Yeah, it the whole movie just has a feel of something that didn't get checked out later on. It was written and then nobody bothered to go back and see if things made sense. And it just kind of went with whatever they had.
All right. So we are at that time again where we do our review or rating of it. And so Paul's going to explain the rating system. And normally we let the guests go first, but that's if the guests have been on the show before. But since you haven't been on the show before this year, first time, we're not going to make you like be the first one. I think I'm going to have Paul go first. So Paul, explain the rating.
So the rating system works on a 1 to 10 scale. And generally speaking, the stinkier the movie, the higher the score. So if you thought the movie was a really good movie and wasn't particularly stinky at all, you give it a 1. If you thought it was kind of in between, it had some stink, but nothing too terrible, you might give it a 5. And if you think it was a big, fat ball of smelly, horrible, disgusting, terrible stink, you would go for a 10. And if you felt like your score needed to be a little more subtle, you could say a 5.5 instead of a 5 or a 6. You could kind of go in between. And then once you do that, we're going to total up all 3 scores from the 3 judges and come up with a total score. And then at the end of the year, we will see the totals from all the movies for that season and see which was the stinkiest film. And then we'll add it to our ladder of stink, which is getting longer and longer and longer.
So, Paul, there you go. It is your turn. You're first. You're up first.
All right. So I think I made my case in regards to what I feel is the problems, the many problems of this particular film. I will touch on a few of the things that I didn't think were a problem. I thought the direction was decent enough. There weren't a whole lot of like super interesting shots, but there weren't any bad ones either. I thought it was okay. The music started off kind of annoying, but it got better as it went along. I could see things. That's always a plus. In a lot of our movies, we can't see things sometimes. I could hear and understand things. And a lot of our movies, you can't have that either. So
it was a professional set, is what you're saying.
There was some money that, if it didn't go towards the FX, it definitely went towards the production part. So that was good. And some of the acting, like I said, was pretty good. Some of it was kind of meh, but there was nothing there that I thought really, really irritated me, other than maybe the mayor. I thought she was way over the top. But just the writing alone and just the stupid stuff that happened is enough to kind of sink it into an 8.5 for me. That's kind of where I'm going with this.
So yeah, that was actually where I was going to go with 8.5 as well. Yeah. I think I was between 8.5 and 9 actually, which I know that's high. And I think this is just a step below Dark Wolf, where it's, 'cause I gave a 9 to Dark Wolf. And I think you haven't seen that, Liz, but it is,
to see Dark Wolf.
I'll add it to the list.
Yes, definitely. But yeah, it was definitely something like this movie was definitely something that it had production value. It wasn't very slow, but you've kind of mentioned things, Paul, like about story-wise, continuity-wise, issues, things like that. Some of it was just too, I don't know.
It's tough, because when you make a movie that is made on what we talked about, Leprechaun and the Fog, those are two vastly, vastly different quality films. Leprechaun movies are all pretty crappy, ridiculous junk, but we know that's what's coming in. The Fog is a fabulous, fantastic, well-written, well-produced, well-acted film.
I love that movie.
We all love that movie. Whoever's seen that movie, it's a great film. So this one's kind of taken stuff from both, and it ends up a lot more towards the Leprechaun side, unfortunately.
Yeah. So it is down to you, Liz. What is your what's your rating on this?
So I went with a 7. I guess I was just trying to be nice, but even though it was stinky, it was still enjoyable. I mean, I actually, Paul, kind of liked the music. I was jamming out while I was watching it. most of the acting was decent. The special effects and makeup were fantastic. So it was very cheesy, but that's why we watch movies like that. I think it was enjoyable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I didn't know how you think, because you did tell me you like this kind of stuff sometimes too. Like, right? I don't think you seek this out. I don't think you seek this out like we do.
I just watch what you tell me to watch, Jonathan.
Oh, right. That's true.
Sometimes. Well, and it's not necessarily a clear and quick science either. I mean, you brought up Dark Wolf. I think pound for pound, this is probably a better production than Dark Wolf was, which is why I rated it like you did, a step below. On the other hand, I had a lot more fun watching Dark Wolf simply because it was a worse film. So for me, it had a little bit more fun to it than this. However, as a production, I think this was a better one. Not by a lot, but by enough.
By enough, yeah. I agree. And that's the thing. Once again, bringing somebody like Liz to the fold, and kind of introducing her more and more to these things. Maybe by like next season or the season after, whatever, if she can take this stuff. I mean, if you show her Neil Breen, I don't know. She might be running for the hills. But like, here it's something a little bit, it's more watchable, more enjoyable and everything. And I mean, it does have a rewatchability to me. Like, I could rewatch this. Now, once again, I have to shut my brain off and just say, okay, all that stuff that doesn't make sense in the movie, like, it doesn't matter, because he's just going there and killing people. Like, that's how you have to view this movie. If you're going into this movie thinking, oh man, I can't wait to see this storyline of this, like, you're watching the wrong movie, So I think that's what Jeff and, Jeff and Gary know, they knew when they were writing this movie that people aren't going to be watching this for the storylines. And if they are, those are the wrong people for this film, people are watching it for the, you know, for the violence, the gore, and the boobs. You know, those are the
things. I get what you're saying, but there's a lot of stuff that I just thought was sloppy and just seemed
right
could have been done. I mean, you know, look at say Warren Miller and what's
Patrick Casey.
And yeah, if they had done this film, do you think it would have been like this? And they would have had a budget similar.
Well, they would also put a lot more comedy into it because that's what they do. Yeah. So, yes, you're right. They should have roped this movie. Honestly,
that would have been awesome.
if the Asylum wants to do a remake, reboot, hire the guys who did. Well, actually, they can't. They won't be able to because Worm and Patrick are now going to be writing for Ace Ventura 3. So good for them.
They can write a cheesy pirate film. I would love to see them do one.
Right. Yeah. They would do a great job with that. The amazing schlock pirate movie. I would watch that.
I'd watch a Kevin Strange weird pirate film too. That'd be fun.
Chris Seaver pirate.
Chris Seaver.
Yeah, I don't think he's done a pirate movie yet. But anyway, thank you so much, Liz, for coming on and chatting with us. Tell us a little bit about what have you been up to lately? I know you just released a short film and everything that people can check out on YouTube, that's right? Cool.
Oh yeah, it's called Gathering. It's directed by Christopher Maggard. It was so well done, so well written. The cast and crew were amazing. It's a horror comedy. You can check it out on YouTube. It's wonderful. It's probably my favorite project that I've been involved with so far.
Until you work with us, then.
Well, yes.
And so you're a nurse and a mother and you're an actress?
And a chicken farmer.
And a chicken farmer. That's awesome. Where are you farming your chickens?
I am farming my chickens in the state of Kentucky right now.
Okay, very nice.
We actually Liz and I actually got to meet for the first time recently. So
I know,
awesome.
It was so exciting.
Yeah. Yay. On my road trip back to home and everything.
I did a little bit of the slow-mo run to give you a hug because I was so excited to meet you.
I was like, wait, why is she running so slow? That was cute. It was fun. It was really nice to hang out with you and get to finally meet you and everything. I think I asked you to come on the show like just a few days ago. So we weren't even planning for this, but we needed a third person. And I always love having you on, like, period, talking, because I feel like you bring something different to us. You know, we're us, like me and Paul, we watch these things all the time. And we're kind of like, we always like bringing in new people who have like a different perspective.
Yeah, we like diversity. We beat the diversity drum all the time because we have the nerdy white guy angle pretty much covered.
So. Exactly. So we love to get a female's perspective on this, and especially one that actually enjoys horror. So do you have a website, or how can people reach you if they like to reach out for to work with you?
I don't have a website yet. You can find me on IMDb, Liz Fletcher, or if you want to find me on Facebook, you can find me on there too. Awesome. I don't know if it's Liz Fletcher or Elizabeth Fletcher. I think it's Liz Fletcher on there.
How many chickens do you have?
I have 7. They're not really baby chicks anymore. My daughter lovingly refers to them as teenager chickens now. So
are there any silky chickens? Because I do love silky chickens.
Silky chickens.
They're the ones with the extra furry feet.
I don't know what kind they are yet. They're still growing.
Okay. Yeah, teenagers, they're still trying to make their mind up about what they want to be in the world. Exactly.
Love it. Exactly.
Sorry, you're gonna get a lot of foul jokes from me.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
All right. That's all he does on any of these shows. So just, you know, or anytime you talk to him. So that's just the typical thing.
Baddadjokes.com.
Exactly. Awesome. So yes, thank you so much, Liz. And everybody, join us in 2 weeks where Paul's going to have his pick of a movie. And good God, I don't know. Every time Paul's like aiming, I think, trying to get us a movie that we're gonna pick a 10 on, you know, or something. So I don't know. But so thank you. Thank you once again, Liz. And we're definitely welcoming you back. I know you're going to do another podcast with me tomorrow, I think, right?
And like, welcome to the nest.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. So you will be busy with us for Indie Film Cafe. And we adore having you here. And
did you like the show?
I did. I enjoyed it. You guys are characters. I love it.
Oh, good. Thank you. I'm glad we didn't lay an egg.
Oh, all right. On that note, Liz, just stick around and we're going to say goodbye to everybody. So everybody, until 2 weeks from now, have a good one. Bye.
Bye.